Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north, this is Safety Works for Wednesday, April 9th, 2025. Sorry about the late start, folks. I had some stuff I was looking for that was not really available, right? So, you know, I'm starting to program prep, and I said, you know what? I need a clip here. Couldn't find it, but I found it. How's everybody doing? Why am I so far off? Not in the center of the screen. Anyway. Yeah, it's Safety Wars. We fly by the seat of our pants all the time. So I got off the phone with a client before the show started tonight. And we're talking about HOP, right? Human Organizational Performance. We'll be talking a lot more about HOP in the upcoming weeks here. We're doing some real deep dives here. And remember, we do that. We're a HOP company, Human Organizational Performance. And the frustration that some of my clients have, because they're like, look, go over Human Organizational Performance. You know that's the way we need to be going, rather than antagonizing everyone and pissing everybody off. And then you don't get, what does safety run on? Let me ask you this. Safety runs on you getting information, right? Some good, some bad. And then you go with that information, making data-driven decisions, right? Remember, data-driven decisions to make your workplace safer, right? And, you know, that's where people get all hung up on the TRIR, experience modification rate, and all this other stuff, right? And I understand how it is. You're working in construction, disaster response, you know, things of that nature where you're going to be dealing with very short-term work, a year or less. Oh, it's easy to go the behavior-based safety route because you get a lot of bang for your buck at the beginning. In my experience, you get a lot of bang. Oh, you know. No hard hat, get out. No safety glasses, get out. Yeah, but. Oh, why aren't you wearing, out? Oh, shame. Oh, you got hurt? Shame on you. We're going to shame you, we're going to blame you, we're going to retrain you. And then we're going to demean you on top of that. Very easy model to apply. So easy. Right? And yeah, and then what happens? The next job starts. Oh, man, this guy's a real J.O. here, A.H. Man. Oh. And it's like, look, don't tell him or her about any safety issues because look at how he reacts. He blows up. Look at what we had to go through, all this crap. Blah, blah, blah. And guess what? There are companies out there, oil companies that you've heard of and you've done business with, this is how they operate. Now, there was one guy, I'm going to use his initials, J.A., in central New Jersey here. He's now retired, moved to Tennessee, thank God, right? A contractor had a near miss. Routine near miss. It was a near miss. They reported it. Everybody got fired. So what do you think happened next time? Nobody reports near misses. That how we got a phone call. Hey, Jimmy, remember so-and-so? Yeah. Well, They're not working at that facility anymore. Because why is that? What was it? What's the name of the street? And it was in Linden, New Jersey. All right. Well, they reported near miss, and they're gone. Well, isn't like a near miss like, oh, thank God, yeah. Sometimes, well, we got to, you know, fix it. Or maybe, hey, thank God we had all of our controls in place, because it wasn't a real accident because we had controls in place. And, man, we did a really good job that didn't develop into something else. But it's still a near miss. But, you know, we did pretty good on this one. Or, hey, it's a training. Okay, well, what did you do wrong? Okay, well. Or what went wrong, what went right? Maybe you didn't do anything wrong. Maybe the system was wrong. Could we have done this different? Okay, well, okay, let's fix that. All right. That's what normal people do. If you want to have, that's what the hop world is. You go into this crap. Oh, we got to get them. Oh, look, and they made that. They cost me 3 hours of paperwork because of this. Son of a gun. Ah, shame on you. All this stuff. Guess what happens? And by the way, that's you're going to say, well, Jimmy, you're exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating on this one. By any means, not exaggerating. Do you really think they're going to report problems so you're able to make data-driven decisions here? Do you really think that they're going to do that? Not going to do it. So, what happens? 6 months, you start the 6 months later, job is over, you move to the next job, and it never gets better. Or, and that's a path that's very quick to take, and it looks good, it looks good. And you know what happens? Eventually, nothing's going to get reported, and eventually something real big is going to happen. I'm going to tell you, guaranteed. And you may not even hear about it until 1 year, 3 weeks and 2 days after it happened. 1 year, 11 months and 3 weeks, you're going to hear about it. Why? Because in a lot of states, they have a 2-year statute of limitations to sue everybody. And guess what? They're not going to sue the employer. No, they ain't going to sue the employer. Not, can't happen. Workers' comp, blah, blah, blah. Not going to. Who are they going to go after? They're going to go after the host's employer. They're going to go after all the other contractors on site. They're going to go after the general contractor, who's also known as the controlling employer in OSHA parlance. And now, oh, well, what happened? How come this wasn't, the son of a bitch wasn't reported? How are we supposed to know? How do we know that this is even true? We don't know. Well, guess what? You antagonized everybody. You piss everybody off. You're not getting the data you need. When this works on a national basis, and you get this over and over and over and over and over and over again, what do you think you end up with? Where we get this zero, because then it gets into the zero accident mindset. Zero accident, zero illnesses, zero injuries. We get to have that nice green and white sign on the outside of the of your workplace. What do you think happens? Any guess? What happens is you have 1.2 million COVID deaths. That's what the hell happens. Because you blew your credibility with everybody. Oh, and I had this. Listening to Fauci and listening to the CDC and listening to these people, they sound like the safety people. The safety people said you got to have the N95 mask or the P100 mask. We're doing these biological. And now we can get away with a little cloth covering, a neckerchief, a bandana. So we get to play cowboys and Indians like we did when we were little. We can play outlaws and marshals when we were little, right? We're the bandana like the Old West, right? Yeah, and they're okay with it. And then it's like, oh, yeah. And then this is what everybody hates you. Then what happens? Hey, we got to make some cuts here. We want to make some cuts. Uh oh. Well, you know what? There's a couple of safety organizations in the government that causes all different kinds of freaking problems. One of them is OSHA, and the other one is NIOSH. How does NIOSH cause it? Well, because that pain in the ass safety guy who's always throwing people off site, that pain in the ass safety guy, you know what? They cause us headache. Well, NIOSH does all different kinds of, well, guess what? Get them, whatever. We're going to get rid of them. And they get, you give, no, most people are on the pain for pain spectrum. You do something for me, against me, I'm going to do something against you. I had people follow me already back in the day, back in 2007, I think it was, 2008, because I told them put on a pair of freaking gloves in accordance with the site plan and what they agreed to do when they came to the job, refused to wear gloves. That was their hand policy here, right? So what do you think happened? We're going to get Jim here. Well, I'm not the one who made up the rule. This is what it is. And plus, 37% of all occupational injuries in those days, at least that's what we were told, had something to do with the hand. So they had a hand protection policy. And because, and this is what safety is presence of controls, presence of controls, capacity, that sort of thing, and your ability to respond to respond to your working environment. Now that's safety, right? Versus gloves or safety. Put on a pair of, anyway, I digress. But what happens is you keep on pursuing these adversarial systems, and this is all that people know is adversarial systems and systems that cause you pain and pain. That's when you get stuff like the No OSHA Act, put out by the 5th District Congressman Biggs, right from Arizona, who's running for governor, and Arizona had an issue with the state. It's not called a state implementation plan, but it is like under EPA, but it's similar, right, where the state's going to take over OSHA and have their own established OSHA thing, right? And then you also get this, well, we're going to cut 800 people out of NIOSH. I don't know. It's crazy. We live in really crazy times. So I'm going to do some stuff here, and we're going to put on some Safety Warrior stuff, music here. And this one is inspired by the stock market, right? And here we go.
The ticker ticks as the numbers change. Waves of green and a sea of strange. Buy the dips and sell the highs. Living for the trade with bloodshot eyes. On an endless ride, risk it all or let it slide. In the game where fortunes collide, keep you cool while the stakes are high. Whispers rise on the trading. bunny moves on an endless ride. Risk it all or let it slide. In the game where fortunes collide, keep you cool while the stakes are high.
We just had a situation come up here. I'm going to go to more music. Folks, as everyone knows, if you're a listener to the program, at least, my father-in-law lives with us, and sometimes that emergency alert goes off. So this time it was nothing, right? So, and to continue with this, we'll talk about the stock market in a minute here. So I interacted with the American Industrial Hygiene Association today on social media, and I told them I would share this letter. So we are sharing this letter. So they issued a press release. AIHA launches a campaign to restore NIOSH, April 9, 2025. And this is a little political stuff sometimes we do. I know on the last program we seem to do a lot of it, but we're going to do a little bit here. I'm working on a very large program here that's going to be a little controversial. I just have to, more information is coming in every day with it. So we're going to do a focus special on a government policy here that you guys, I mean, I know I'll offend people. We'll put it to you that, so we'll put up trigger warnings here. So, AIHA, the Association for Scientists and Professionals committed to preserving and ensuring occupational and environmental health and safety, is taking action to restore staff and funding to NIOSH in the face of devastating federal cuts. Created in by the 1970 Occupational Safety and Health Act, well, also known as the Williams-Steiger one, right? Senator Williams from New Jersey, NIOSH is the agency within the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that is responsible for conducting research, making recommendations to prevent work-related illnesses and injuries. Now, I'll point out to you, I think that part of the reason for the cuts is CDC, in my opinion, because of what a lot, no, they did stuff that people didn't like during COVID. Reductions to NIOSH personnel planned by the Trump administration will leave only a fraction of its original workforce to manage select programs, said IAIHA CEO Lauren Sloan. The proposed reductions effectively end the Institute's ability to conduct essential research and provide guidance. The scope of the cuts is unprecedented, affecting not just the staff and programmatic activities of NIOSH, but also the entire occupational, environmental, health, and safety profession, according to one industrial hygienist remaining at NIOSH, who did not have permission to speak on the record and therefore asked to remain anonymous. The scientific resources, expertise, and funding that NIOSH provides cannot be recreated elsewhere. AIHA's campaign to restore NIOSH, announced via email to its membership and a post by the association LinkedIn account, encourages professionals in OEHS and allied fields to contact their elected representatives about the importance of maintaining NIOSH staffing and programs. The campaign already has generated 34,000 messages to legislatures. Individuals who are wishing to take action against can message the representatives directly through the association's grassroots portal, which provides a pre-filled template letter. A comprehensive PDF with information about the importance of NIOSH and its programs is also available to help advocates customize messages. My interaction with NIOSH was, was that you should go and put the link right in your email. They're right on your post, rather than now, you know, having to read probably 250 words here, I would think, in here to get to a link, right? So one of the things when you write a press release, right, so you have the issue, then you have a call to action, and the call to action shouldn't be this far down in the letter, right? This should be the call to action. In this case, I think should be, you put it on LinkedIn, you have the press release, and then you say your call to action right in the post. Hey, this is what you need. You need this, you need this. Now, and it goes on and on and on. Now, what are, all right, critical programs, right? There, well, what, right? So National Firefighter Registry for Cancer, which was created when Congress passed the Firefighter Cancer Registry Act of 2018, and research, and you know how many respirators fail that get submitted to them? And remember, and I think the tariffs may be dealing with this, is how much stuff from China just gets labeled and stamped, approved. A big one is UL listed, right? The shit's not UL listed, and guess what? It's there. But anyway, the stamp is on there, and they end up burning down the house with Christmas tree lights, you know? That sort of thing. But with this, now, can there be reforms yet? Is there fat around it yet? Do you, all that stuff goes, that's absolutely true. But according to most economic studies, right, and it's quoted right here, right, $338 million to over $1.2 billion, right? So you're getting, that's a cost, it's $338.1.2. You're getting more in a significant return on investment here. That's what the AIHA is saying. And I have a tendency to agree with them because basic scientific research, the organization my wife is with, they fund basic scientific research. Basic scientific research is not done, largely by people who sell, who deal with technology and everything else, and diseases and things of that nature. Basic scientific research often is initiated by the government because there's no economic incentive to do that stuff. It's sort of like with a human organizational performance. When you understand how the brain works, the person is going to make shortcuts and do things easy, right? to conserve, anthropologists and biologists tell us it's because the brain uses so much energy that back when we were in the Pleistocene, we didn't have a lot of higher reasoning skills, so we had to, or time to do higher reasoning stuff, so brain shortcuts that makes things easier. Same thing with the economy. It's real simple. There, it costs, costs a lot of money to do basic scientific research. And that basic scientific research isn't going to happen unless you can make money, like, in the short term. Most companies don't think 30, 40, 50 years out with that. That's why you have certain, labor agreements and laws that are passed. And then they never get, revisited, like the Fair Labor Standards Act is one of them. But I digress. I don't want to go off on a tangent here because I have a lot to say about that. So you're getting a lot of money off of this, right? Now, here is your turning knowledge into action to protect more workers and join the campaign to restore NIOSH. And this is all at AIHA.org, or you can visit them on LinkedIn, American Industrial Hygiene Association. And here, click here to submit your letter. We're going to click there. I normally don't do screen shares with this, but I believe... I'm drawing an inference that I got permission to do this here, right? And it gives you everything on here, and then save, send a message. I tell you what, it might be, I mean, if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, but Congress is in session, I believe, it might be worth it to go down and double-check that. It might be worth it to take a drive down there. If you're in the Washington, D.C. area, make phone calls and or wait for your congressperson or senator to become available, right? I don't know if that all was just shared here. No, in their home district office and do that. Now, the other thing that you could do is get your local elected officials involved, right? So if you're a firefighter, and you're, or something like that, go down and get your local fire department involved in this. This sounds like something that they would really want to get involved with is on this specifically, right, with that. Right, and then just remind them how on September 11th, how the government didn't protect them on that, and it, with that, and all that happened there, the Stroga Act and everything. And you can also point out, well, you know, this is NIOSH is like intended to gather information to prevent something like that from happening again. So, in conclusion, go check out the AIHA stuff. Number one, number two, contact your senators, Congress people. Number three, your local level, don't discount them. They get some attention because all politics is local. And the other thing is, write the letter. No, don't do anything nasty. You're not going to get anywhere with that. Calm, reasoned, things along that line. But what do I know? I'm just a guy on the radio. So we're going to go to our first commercial break, and we're going to go into some other stories.
Have you listened or watched the Safety Warship? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives in some information that you might be interested in.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
Now, all right, so in the headlines, I talked about Handmaid's Tale here. So just to let you know, Handmaid's Tale was written in the 80s by the author Margaret Atwood. And then she... eventually sold the movie rights. There was a a movie in the 90s, I believe, called The Handmaid's Tale. It was, I believe, Faye Dunaway and another famous male actor. Name escapes me right at this moment. Anyway, it was about a religious group, extremists, Christian extremists, and there is a similar group out there, very small. One of our Supreme Court justices is a member of a similar group, where they're very, very religious. I would say their interpretation of the Bible, not really in agreement with my interpretation. And there's a demographic, and there's a demographic crisis, essentially. They're going to say, well, here you go again about demography. Yeah, okay, we're going to talk about demography. There's a demographic crisis, and people go nuts, basically. So often, with this Handmaid's Tale, people say, well, this politician is in, that's in, and, you know, this is evil, and blah, blah, blah. And they try to equate it with what's going on today. And as the author has said numerous times, everything that happens in the book and the TV show has happened somewhere at any time. So with that. But, you know, it's popular to latch on to certain mainstream political groups and say, well, they're supporting the Handmaid's Tale. And someone tried to do this last week when I was at Rutgers talking about this. And I said, cursing about blah, 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 this and cults and blah, blah, blah. And they said, well, it's all one political party. And then I pointed out, I said, you do realize that there are religious cults that the other party that you're a member of supports. He said, oh, yeah, where? I mentioned him all of the areas, and I mentioned to him, I said, don't believe me, go on. You can look it up. Google this. Google that. Because it's obvious you don't believe me. So he got all annoyed. Teacher came back in. And then 10 minutes later, he said, holy shit, I Googled what you said. Wow, things are really effed up out there. I said, yeah. I said, people are more concerned about the system than they are about people and solving a problem. We deal with that all the time. You're a safety professional. You should know that. Everybody wants to defend the system. We invested all this money in behavior-based safety. Now when we start to move something different, well, guess what? We can't do that anymore because we're engineers or we're managers. We solved the safety problem. We implemented this. And then you point out, yeah, but safety is about people. It's not about machines. Right? So we have evolved. Research has gone on. We've evolved. We have continuous process improvement, and now we have this. It's sort of like the same thing where people are like, well, no, they're missing the point of the whole Handmaid's Tale, in my opinion. Again, many different opinions out there. Now, essentially, it goes like this narrative. There is a demographic issue. Causes lower birth rates. Now let's think about this. In one generation, what a lower birth rate means, and as it approaches zero, you're not going to need as many toys for the children. You're not going to need as many schools for the children. You're not going to need children's clothing. You're not going to need diapers. You're not going to need a lot of stuff. So what happens is you don't need as many schools. You don't have as many schools, the need for them, out-of-work teachers, out-of-work textbooks. Think of all the stuff that goes into a school, art supplies, chemistry supplies, buildings, administrators, facilities like sports teams. Because right now everybody's got to be a member of a team. You can't go out there and play with your neighbors, especially in my town. Right? All of the everything that you can imagine goes down. Now, all of a sudden, you have an intellectual drain. Why? Because you don't have as many people to do as much stuff. You don't, right? So if you have, like we're approaching now, according to the U.S. Census, let me get the numbers here. Ooh, I had them right here. So U.S. Census, here you go. Census.gov. All right. So right now, this is our population. It's estimated at 341,594,184. The world population is 8.1 billion, and a whole bunch of numbers afterwards. Once that starts to go down, you're not going to have as many smart people out there. Why? Because you have a smaller group of people. Right? Number one, quality of the people. You're not going to have as many consumers. So now your economy is impacted. All because of population. Now you're going to say, Jimmy, you're full of guvno. And this is what I'm going to do. We're going to go, and this is from last October, right? And you're going to recognize the voice. Let's assume that we got it in here. Hold on.
But if they're all properly vetted, and that doesn't happen, and America is not having enough babies to keep our populations up, okay. So we need immigrants that have been vetted to do work, there wouldn't be a problem. And he couldn't keep people all torn up and upset. Kamala Harris says, I don't...
Okay, so who was that man? That with the raspy voice. That was Bill Clinton last October campaigning for Kamala Harris. Right? I could have quotes after quotes and information after information make for a very boring program here with this. But population means... things. Now we're going to share this here now, right? So let's go with this website here. This is from USCensus.gov. So here we have a population pyramid. And if you have an environmental background, you're going to understand where we are right here. So, right? So standard population pyramid, you want to have more people on the bottom than on the top. And specifically with our economy, we need a lot of people between the ages of 30 to 34 and like 50, because those are all the spending, right? All the spending category. That's when you're going to have children. That's when you're going to buy a house and everything else. So here we have, it's not so much that we have a problem, right? We have 30 to 34 right here, right? And that's a nice wide level. Look at what's coming on beneath it. It's smaller and smaller and smaller. Now you say, well, Jimmy, what does that mean? That means that there's less consumers out there is what that means. So here's the question here. If we're not going to, immigration, they're not going to stop immigration. They're going to put it just like the former president, Bill Clinton, is in there. They'll have more immigration. They'll have some restrictions maybe. But they're not going to stop it because of this population pyramid here. Now, you look at the population pyramids of other countries, right? If all of their young people who are workers here are going to be coming into into the United States, what do you think that population pyramid is going to look like in their country? It's going to look worse than this. I tell you that because they don't have a lot of the services. Some of these countries, the education or anything. So the people savvy enough to get to the United States are the ones that we're going to get. Oh, there's a brain drain from there. So now we have a problem with all this stuff. If we go into this, I know what the hell with it. I'm in a risky mood. This is from the World Bank. Here, this commentary. It's fair use. This is the population, right? The birth rate here, right? Look at that. We're at a 2.3. We're right at the replacement rate in 2020. Now we're going lower than that here. Going on. We're on the down low. We're on the downward track, right? Let's see the map. Here we have a map. This is dataworldbank.org. I think it's data, so they really can't copyright data, right? Here we have Canada, 1.33. United States, 1.67. Mexico, 1.8. Colombia, 1.69. Right, so you need something like a 2.3 population rate to maintain your population. Bolivia, 2.58. Brazil, 1.63. We have all very low birth rates here. And now you're getting these people to come up to, and you know, they're human beings. I shouldn't even say these people, right? Because that's disrespectful, and I apologize that. You have all these people, because you're going to have a brain drain. Where are the population centers here? Where the high birth rates are? The high birth rates are also the areas that have challenges with basic services, healthcare, things of that nature, regardless of who pays for it. So you're looking here in Africa, that's where all of the high birth rates are. That's also where the higher infant mortality rates are with that. So here's the high mortality rate here, right? 80, right? And again, you could go look at this here, right? Birth rate. So again, this is where we're headed here, is lower birth rates. So what I'm saying is the Handmaid's Tale, right? It's a cautionary tale here with this. But I think that what can we learn from it? Yeah, you know, they talk about a lot of stuff that are out there that are really horrible things that are portrayed in that whole TV series by Hulu. But we can use some of the lessons there. And all right. So I had a professor in college. Name escapes me here. I forget the guy's name. In the last class I took in undergrad school was because I couldn't work out the schedule exactly right, so I had to take summer classes. My last semester was a summer class, and this was in 1992, Stockton State College, not Richard Stockton University. And it was science fiction. It was science fiction and social realism or social culture, something like that. And we went through, being a sci-fi fan, I went through all of this stuff and looked at critical things. And one of the attributes of good sci-fi is that it has to be relevant to what we're dealing with today. And it applies to what we're dealing with today. But because of science fiction, we have freedom to explore different avenues, right? And The Handmaid's Tale would qualify as science fiction. It would be. Why? Because they're allowed to explore different avenues and this whole dystopic future because of a population crisis. So my question now, China reportedly has already reached, has a population crisis issue here. There's more people on top of that population pyramid than on the bottom, and it's exaggerated. So reportedly they already have that, but it's hard to come by accurate information from China. So all of this works into, what am I saying? We may be headed into a situation with low population. So we already are in that situation where it's actually going to really impact us here in the United States and the Western world, right? I was having a debate the other day with someone online. Not that I get into online debates, but we're all about accurate information, where after World War II, it's a known fact that around Central Europe, the they were having problems with denazifying things because the Nazis ran things, right? What are you going to do? Get rid of all your public officials? No, you're going to keep them in there, and some of the heads are eventually made their way into the European Union and European Parliament and that whole structure for the whole continent. So there are some people who believe that, Nazi Germany lost the war, but they're still around in these organizations out there because they needed somewhere to deal with bureaucrats, and they were savvy enough to get involved here. That's one theory. And then they said, well, you know, Jim, yeah, well, they have immigrants in there. Yeah, they have immigrants. They allowed very little immigration because of the population pyramid. Again, these population pyramids are very important because they drive everything. They drive the economy. They drive policy. They drive everything out there. And China, why does China have a problem? 40 years of zero one-child policy to get there because they were having issues managing this number of people. The other thing is this. There's promotion of low birth rates because easier control smaller populations. Sort of like that ant movie. That's the other. Okay, you want to talk some conspiracy theory? Well, you can go down that hole. So we talked about, right, NIOSH, we talked about all different types of stuff. We're at 9 o'clock, right? We're going off live. We already have on Safety FM. So we're going to just continue here, and I'm going to run through all the news headlines here that you folks have grown accustomed to. Here we have, let's talk about here's our next Safety Warrior song.
Blacktop stretch, but there's no sound. Underneath, the earth falls down. Forgotten veins left long untamed. Now Route 8 is sunk in shame. Cars are stranded, chaos flies. The cracks reveal where danger lies. A hungry mouth swallows it whole. The road's a beast with no control.
Our Route 80 update here in New Jersey. This is from NJ.com, a reporter report by this cannot be correct. Oh, this is not correct. Okay, so in Route 80. Right, so Route 80, what's the latest news here? When will Route 80 reopen? New Jersey releases an updated timeline for sinkhole repairs. This is from April 5th. Right, New Jersey reveals updated timeline. State Department of Transportation officials plan to reopen two lanes of I-80 West in early May, with two eastbound lanes to follow in middle of May, and a full reopening of the highway is planned in late June. The highway has been closed at exit 34 in Wharton since March 19, when a third sinkhole opened on the median next to the westbound lanes. A second sinkhole opened on February 10th, closing the eastbound lanes. The design is being finalized. However, repair work is underway, said Stephen Shapiro, a New Jersey DOT spokesman. In response to questions from New Jersey Advance Media, I-80 westbound is expected to have two lanes reopened by May 4th and all lanes by June 25th. Right? So, what's going on? So, here we have. The sinkhole repairs includes excavating the area, installing a base of large stone, and driving micropiles into bedrock to support a concrete slab. Right. So basically, they are doing a lot of pile driving there, and they're building the road on top of pile drivers, on top of piles. Good idea, going down to Granite. This is not an easy feat. Micropiles are multiple steel bars or pipes that are 5 to 12 inches in diameter, drilled into the ground at a depth that's 200 feet that can support up to 200 pounds of weight. Additional fill and soil will be placed on top of the concrete slabs and compacted before several layers of asphalt are applied to reconstruct the road. The design is similar to one DOT used in 2009 in a nearby section of I-80 East, near 34, exit 34. That, right, in New Jersey, you got to talk about exits. That project dealt with ongoing settlement issues related to the abandoned Huff Mine off Main Street in Wharton, which is located under I-80 at mile marker 33.6. So the way that Route 80 roads are exits are marked are based on mile markers. So this is like the same neighborhood. The project involved constructing a series of concrete slabs and structurally bridge over an area of 310 feet by 23 feet west on the Main Street underpass structure in Wharton that the I-80 East that deceleration at right lanes go over, according to project information. So that's how they're doing it. So we were all wondering how they were doing it. Not only grout, but they're driving piles 200 feet down. I mean, this is not unheard of because we just went through, in my neighborhood, the Tappan Zee Bridge rebuild here, where they put in a new Tappan Zee Bridge. They got rid of the Malcolm Wilson Tappan Zee Bridge and named it after another unpopular governor here. So, and the new bridge. So you can go look that up. It's a, you know, if I mention it, I'm going to get like a million and one different comments here. So let's talk about the stock market here. So here, and I used to play this all the time. Dow Jones Industrial, 40,608.45, up 7.87%. S&P 500 up 54.6090. NASDAQ up 17,124. Russell 2000 at 1913. Crude oil up slightly, 62.49. Bitcoin is holding at 82,000. And gold is up to 3,100. 10-year Treasury note down 4.2.87%. So, the NASDAQ, this was the best day since 2001. So, what's going on here? Like I just said yesterday on this very show, we're being manipulated. Constant manipulation. Again and again and again. To get a rise out of you. Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. So this is what I'm going to tell people. Just sit back, relax. Right? I'm not a financial guy. I'm not giving financial advice. But you got to calm down here. Well, Jim, we're losing money. Well, guess what? It's down. It's up. Now it's up. It may be down tomorrow. It may be up tomorrow. So what they think happened is that there was a pause on the tariffs by the president for all most countries except for China, right? And that's basically it. And reportedly 75 nations are coming to negotiate, which is what I think the point was. What's Trump doing? Jimmy's opinion is to rile things up and then see what happens and manipulate people. If others can manipulate, we can manipulate. And this is basically the game. It's a very dangerous game, one that I hope will work out okay here. All right. What else we have here? Mm-hmm. Okay, this is from fizz.org, and this is from today, a story by Ingrid Fadelli from fizz.org. People diagnosed with various mental health disorders can sometimes start engaging in intense political behavior, such as violent protests, civil disobedience, and aggressive expression of political views. So far, however, the link between behavior and the political behavior in the brain has rarely been rarely explored, as is not viewed as central to the understanding of mental health disorders. Researchers at Harvard Medical School, Stanford University of Medicine, and Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine recently carried out a study investigating the neural underpinnings of political behavior. Their findings, published in Brain, unveiled the existence of a brain circuit that is associated with the intensity of people's political involvement, irrespective of their ideology or political affiliation. Right? And it goes on. With that, all right, as a neuroscientist, this is from Dr. Siddiqui, I don't often ask patients about their political behavior, but it could be an important change that occurs in neuropsychiatric disorders. And if we can find a brain target that modulates political behavior, we can figure out how to help patients increase or decrease that behavior. Traditionally, when researchers find that damage to a specific brain region is consistently associated with a symptom, they would conclude that the two are causally connected. And when it comes to more complex behaviors, such as intense political involvement, associated patterns of brain damage are not immediately apparent. For many years, the field thus assumed that there was no strong relationship between lesion locations and political behavior. And with that, so I'm going to tell you this. I didn't need a study for this. After all the years that I was involved in politics, there's some, on both sides, there's some real, what we would call, wing nuts here. Again, and a lot of them seem to come out during COVID on both sides here, because we, so this actually matters here with this. You know what? I'm going to take this and I'm going to post it to, I'll post it to something, but let me, So this is phys.org. So, I mean, it goes to explain a lot of behavior out there, especially what we're seeing the last 10 years. This is from archive.is, from the New York Times. When was this published? Today. Americans are preparing for when all hell breaks loose. Once thought of as a fringe mindset, the prepared citizen movement is gaining traction in a world shaped by war, the pandemic, and extreme weather. And the story is by Thomas Gibbons Neff. I'll read the beginning here. Two men, some wearing camouflage, others a vest loaded with ammunition for the AR-15 rifles, gathered on the morning shade of oak trees in Central Florida last month. They were there to learn marksmanship tactics common among special operation forces and elite law enforcement units. And I'm going to leave it at that, because as I think in some states, for a private citizen to get private military training may be illegal. So I'm going to stop right there. But if you want to check it out on the New York Times here, there's a big article here. Program every September talks about disaster preparedness. I wonder what would be wonderful if you had a safety program dedicated to disaster preparedness every September for Disaster Preparation Month. Oh, that's us. Yeah, my wife is laughing over there. Yeah, that's us. We do it every September. Even before we had safety wars, we did it every September for disaster preparation. Here. What other stories do we have? Oh, here's another one to back me up. How millennials and Gen Z are lowering birth rates around the world. We're headed for disaster here, folks. With fewer people choosing traditional route, and this is from Newsweek, you know, that conservative rag, Newsweek, right? With few people, and I mean that sarcastically, with fewer people choosing the traditional route of tying the knot and starting a family, it's no secret that the number of marriages and births is declining around the world. As a result, the fertility rate in the U.S. alone has a historic low of 1.7 births. They're rounding up. Lower than the 2.1 births needed to maintain a stable population. Many countries are trying to tackle this by incentivizing couples to have children, but it seems the problem runs deeper here. There's been a dramatic uptick in people refraining from relationships altogether and choosing to remain single. Again, this started, I think, during the AIDS epidemic of the 1980s that I grew up with, and many of us grew up with, right? Where the people, and this has gone on and on. And in certain countries like Japan, they've identified this going back for many years. Again, sexual habits changed, and where that's all I'm going to say, in the 1980s because of AIDS. And it's been compounded ever since. And the other thing, with one reversal during the pandemic, the other thing is that people, technology, and social media are causing people to not have a social life, right? I mean, I work with a lot of people, you know, a lot of people out there. And what do you think happens? Oh, my son can't get a job. My daughter can't get a job. They don't even want a driver's license. Right? So you're limited. I had a conversation many years ago with a leading environmental policy guy, one that you've heard of, one of the top ones in the country at the time, and talking about even a driver's license. Right, he said, Jimmy, you probably wouldn't have gotten married if it weren't for automobiles. I said, yeah, and the internet, right? And he said, yeah, you know, so because automobiles, why? Because I was able to travel to my now wife, and she was able to travel to me, right, because of a car, right? So here we have people not having cars, not wanting to drive anywhere. What are they going to do? With that. So, boom, boom. You know what? I'm going to save that for later on. We'll go over EPA news a little bit here. So, a Connecticut firm complies with federal lead paint laws after EPA inspection. Again, this is another one. Hard to find people here. Find people doing this, right? So, the US EPA today announced a settlement with a company that includes a $40,399 civil penalty, an agreement by the company to maintain compliance with federal laws, protect residents from risks of lead-based paint. Basically, you have to pass EPA training and have it's called RRP rule, right? And everything else, and different licenses and everything else with lead. I can talk about it forever. I won't. There was an EPA administrator, Lee Zeldin, releases a video message about the EPA mission. Let's see what this is.
A lot of Americans don't fully understand what the EPA is or what it does. Some would say the EPA protects the environment. That's true. But there's a whole lot more to know beyond that. EPA's mission is to protect human health and the environment. There are many laws on the books that give EPA core statutory obligations to fulfill under the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, Toxic Substances Control Act, CERCLA for Superfund sites, and much more. Under my leadership, EPA will no longer view the goals of protecting our environment and growing our economy as binary choices. We must and we will choose both. That's why I announced our Powering the Great American Comeback initiative. Under the Trump administration, we will continue tirelessly in our work to ensure clean air, land, and water for every American, while simultaneously driving economic growth by unleashing energy dominance, pursuing permitting reform, making the U.S. the AI capital of the world, and bringing back American auto jobs. EPA's headquarters in our nation's capital is just a stone's throw from the White House. Here, our teams in the Office of Water, Air and Radiation, Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention, Land and Emergency Management, and elsewhere work to implement our mission while powering the great American comeback. The work we do here filters out to our 10 regional offices around the country, where our teams on the ground carry out our mission right in your backyard. The regions are our neighbors, our farmers, our local engineers and scientists. They make certain that EPA's statutory obligations are being fulfilled and that your voice can be heard while honoring the agency's core mission. Our teams carry out Superfund efforts, where EPA identifies highly contaminated sites to clean up and return to productive use. When disaster strikes, EPA responds immediately, coordinating with state, local, and federal counterparts to remove hazardous materials and restore access to safe drinking water. Recently, the unprecedented scale of the Los Angeles fires suggested a recovery timeline stretching into the summer or beyond. Under President Trump's leadership, EPA embraced his executive order to complete our hazardous materials cleanup in 30 days. What typically would have taken months was accomplished in 28 days, thanks to the incredible efforts of thousands of dedicated professionals. State and local governments best understand how to meet the needs of their communities, so we work hand in glove to ensure states have the resources they need to maintain public water utilities and infrastructure, test air quality, and more. When our local partners need assistance, EPA answers the call to detect and address contamination, review and approve pesticides and fertilizers, and so much more. Under President Trump's leadership, we are recommitting to common sense policies that preserve our environment and work for all Americans to unleash American energy, revitalize domestic manufacturing, cut costs for families, and pursue permitting reform. EPA will strive to accomplish all this while fulfilling our commitment to the rule of law, advancing cooperative federalism, and being great stewards of your hard-earned tax dollars. Here at EPA, we are committed to serving you, the American public, to make you proud, and to protect America's beautiful environment.
Okay, so what does this mean? The EPA has decided that they're going to be federalism, is what this is called. Let the locals handle it. There's an argument for it, an argument against it. The big argument against any, a lot of this stuff, I mean, and people just say, well, no, well, Jim, you're too extreme. Sovereign immunity. That's the, that's what the problem is. Sovereign immunity and all of this. Now, what do you mean, Jim? Well, I mean, it's like this. Let's get our handy hazard matrix table up. Right. So you have the 5x5 hazard matrix table. Let me get this up here. Boom, boom, boom. Right. And share screen. So here we have the hazard matrix table. So what some people do is they assign to, and you're a safety professional and you realize this, and or anything with risk. You're trying to assess risk. On one side of the table, now this is like the old-fashioned multiplication tables that we had in third grade if you're a Gen Xer. Right? And it used to be at the front of the marbled notebooks, right, that we used to get, right? And, you know, in my community, those aren't too popular because you couldn't rip out the pages. But anyway, I digress. So across the top, you have how severe were the outcomes of something happening, right? Are they insignificant, minor, significant, major, or severe? And on the left-hand side, you have rare, likely, moderate, or vertically, I should say. You have rare, unlikely, moderate, likely, or almost certain as a frequency. Those are assigned numbers. So on this thing, right, so you go 5. So here you got, it's, let's say the probability of something happen is, yeah, it's going to happen, almost certain. So it would be 5. And what would the effects would be? Would they be insignificant, minor, significant, major, or severe? And let's say they would be severe. So you go 5 for almost certain and 5, right? Those, right? For severe, multiply them together, you get 25. Right. So our more and more stuff is coming out on this I-80 thing, right, that people forgot about years ago. So they knew that in that area that it was likely going to happen, right, or moderate probability of something like that happening with the cave-in because it happened before. So now what the planners were probably thinking was, well, it was unlikely that something like that would occur, a cave, right? So now what's the issue? Well, yeah, would it be a busy highway, a sinkhole opens up, especially at night or during foul weather? Well, guess what? Severe, right? But let's say now we have a situation where we have sinkholes opening up. Now you jump up on you, right? Now you're up to a 3 or a 4. So you go 3, and let's say it's a major thing. 3 times 4 is 12. And if you go on down on here, and all of these numbers have things. So with this, right? So if your number is between 1 to 4, it's acceptable risk. 5 to 9, adequate. Maybe consider for further analysis. 10 to 16, tolerable, right? Must be reviewed in a timely manner to carry out improvement strategies. 17 to 25, acceptable. And that's what you get from multiplying this stuff. All right, so there, again, this is courtesy of Safety Culture. Now, sovereign immunity. I didn't forget about it. This is Jim rambling. Sovereign immunity, you take all these nice little numbers and you multiply it by 0, which means you get 0 and there is no risk. That's how governments manage, guys, often. I'm from New Jersey. This is the kind of shit that happens all the time. You know, it doesn't impact me, so therefore it's no risk. How many of our organizations are run like that? Who in your organization has no risk in doing anything? Often it's management and the supervisors. So what do they have? So you anything on here, they're going to multiply by 0 or a very low number, a fraction, to get a lower number here, lower end number. Why? No risk. And this is what happens when you don't discipline people who do things that are really so effed up and beyond the pale here, right? Safety isn't about firing people and blaming people. It isn't. But sometimes people do things so screwed up and have such a total disregard for human life and their coworkers that, what are you going to do? Right? So I pretty much talked about everything I wanted to talk about tonight. We will be back tomorrow. And for Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. And take care, everybody. All right? Take care. Be safe.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.